Millennial Media Podcast.
Welcome to the Millennial Mija Podcast. I'm so glad you're with us today. We are here on the campus of Sierra College in Sacramento. Dr. Cruz invited me here to speak at the Latino Prep Summit. And yeah, introduce yourself, Dr. Cruz.
It's an honor to be here. First of all, I'm a fan and appreciate that you're using your voice this way. We just experienced about 200 young people who never get taught their history. These are Raza kids who go to non-Raza schools, and so you had a chance to speak to them, I had a chance to speak to them, and I'm feeling a high that I can't explain. We had some youngsters come up to us right now telling us that they're living in a car, that they're going through hell and back, and I'm still feeling that kind of I'm not worthy, and just being thankful to be alive. And so it's an honor to be here with you, and let's do it.
So I wanted to first introduce how we met.
Okay.
So you talked a little bit about it when you got up and spoke to the kids today, but I want you to describe your first impression of me, because you had an impression of me before I knew who I was talking to when you came and talked to me.
Okay. Yeah.
So you, my meeting you was unique for me because I think I got to meet you before I got to meet Dr. Cruz. You know. Because I didn't know who you were, and you just came up to me, and you were just being a nice person, and I was in a really low point. So if you could just enter us from that moment.
Well, you know, here's the thing. We went to a new conference called Courageous Conversations, and they were having a Latino, what they call Latinx Summit, all the way in Houston, Texas. And, you know, Ms. Angela Aguirre was one of the keynotes, and I'm behind on the time. So I have Instagram, but I'm not following it. It's not my thing. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't up to date. I brought one of my former students, Selena, who now has a daughter, Sage, and one of our designers for the school, Miss Ruby. And we came to Houston, Texas. I was scheduled to speak, I think, a day after you. And what I remember is that you had a lot of technical challenges with the person that was doing some of the technical setup. The videos wouldn't play and everything else. And I was, as a speaker, I was deeply empathizing with you and being like, this is hella hard.
Yeah, you knew what I was going through.
No, not exactly, because I don't walk your shoes. Nobody mm-hmm. walks your shoes.
Yeah.
But I knew a little bit, and I'm like, she's handling it really smoothly. And then when you started diving into your poetry, talking about your father, your poetry cuts people and it heals people. And then you started speaking about your moms, and I'm not gonna lie, I was lightweight mad at you. But I don't know you enough to say that.
Yeah.
But I was already trying to defend your moms because you were painting one picture of moms, and I wanted you to turn that corner.
I couldn't get there without my videos, because those were the videos of my interviewing her.
I just sense that you're cut from two chingon people.
Yeah.
And you did so much justice to your father, and I couldn't wait to hear the justice of your chingona mom, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think we live in such a sexist and patriarchal society that you have probably, as my guest, been told many times to shut up and maybe just look a certain way on the outside, and they might not see who you really are. And so when I close my eyes and listen, you're a fire. And after you were done, I don't know why I do this. I struggle to talk to people I admire afterwards because I get into my feels.
Mm-hmm.
So then I didn't speak to you. I didn't approach you. And then you left. And I was like, well, I missed this opportunity to tell this person, I think you're a badass. And please keep doing what you're doing. Mm-hmm. But you were gone. You left. You're not in the space anymore. And so we were at a fancy hotel in Houston where the conference was. And then I see you downstairs at a cafe area type of.
At the bar.
Okay.
I was waiting for the bar to open.
Okay. Well, okay. So this is your podcast. You're keeping it hella real. Thank you. Okay. But I see you, and then I'm like, I need to just approach and just say thank you. And so I didn't know what you were going through. You know, that's your story. But it moved me to know that you had just rocked the space. So much so that, Selena was alive. Ruby was alive. I was alive. We were hella feeling you. So much so, we wanted to take pictures and talk to you and build with you and invite you to Homies Empowerment. But then I saw another side of you at the bar. I saw you super quiet, vulnerable. It seemed like something was up. Mm-hmm. And you looked up and listened. And I hate, we're here. You were talking to somebody right now, and you were opening up about your book, and they began to look at other people. I don't like that. Mm-hmm. If I'm having a conversation with you, I'm staring at you.
Yeah.
And that's what I experienced from you, is that you were looking me dead in the eye, and you started to reveal stuff about yourself that was very vulnerable. Mm-hmm. I just found that to be a blessing, and I'm like, I think she's real. Mm-hmm. And not that you're not, it's just we don't know each other, right? And so I left really impressed. And I was like, we got to bring her to Oakland. I hope she'll come one day.
Yeah, and then I did. And it was, see, the thing was for me is that, like, I did not know who you were. So to me, when I saw you, you have this thing, like, this is for, like, a medicine man, right? Or what is this?
It's just
that
more.
That you're wearing it.
Yeah, it's more part of the Huichol peoples in different parts of Mexico. They bead. And bead is both part of their tradition and their ceremony. I've been removed from my history and culture so much that now I'm trying to reclaim it. Mm-hmm. And part of the region in Mexico where I'm from is where the Huicholes are from. Mm-hmm. But our trees have been so cut down that when you ask me, what is your indigenous group or tribe that you're from in Mexico? It's not even in books anymore. We have to reclaim a lot of that.
Yeah.
So it's me trying to reclaim a lot of my indigeneity. And so I wear it proudly. The way some business people hella wear suits and ties, mm-hmm. nah. It's more of this beaded necklaces to kind of, I'm proud of my culture and I'm proud of who I am.
Yeah. And I think in that moment, that was all I needed to latch onto to feel at home. Because my dad was very proud of his indigenous roots. And he would always make sure that I knew, like, Mija, you're an Aztec warrior. He would always tell me that. He would tell me that I was strong and that I come from people that, built empires. And that I don't know, in that moment I felt so alone, but I think my dad spoke to me through you, and it was these identifiers. It said homies empowerment on your shirt. I still didn't know what that was, but I did see that it was in Old English. I identified with that. I like grasped to that. And then I saw the beads and I grasped to that. And then I saw your tattoos and I grasped even more. And then your brown skin. And so then it was like, for a moment in somewhere that was so foreign to me, I felt home. And I could tell you what I was feeling, because in that moment I was waiting for the bar to open, because I was ready to just, that my whole trip there in my mind had been ruined. I ruined my whole trip. I was the worst speaker that ever existed, because it's never just the worst speaker, it's the worst speaker that ever lived, because that's what that disease of depression and addiction and all this stuff I was going through at the time will do to you, is it will lie to you. And you were a reminder of the truth in a moment where I needed a mirror so badly. And you mirrored myself back to me. And I left the bar after our conversation. I went, started walking down downtown Dallas. I got myself some pizza and I got myself a glass of wine. But I wasn't drinking for the same reason that I was going to. And so that was the distinction. I was drinking a glass of wine with my pizza to celebrate what you reminded me that I had accomplished. And I had totally forgotten that. Like, it didn't matter all of the things I had done right. The only thing that I was allowing to guide me was that fear and anger and sorrow and just like this pit of despair that I put myself in when I feel that I didn't live up to my, I guess in that moment, my own expectations of myself. And so I got to meet you, and it wasn't until the end of the conversation that I asked you finally, what are you doing here? You know, like, are you just here to listen to the things? You're like, no, I'm gonna give a keynote tomorrow. That's when it dawned on me. Homies, I read that in the thing, you're Dr. Cruz. And I was like, oh my gosh. And I think that was a really important way to meet you for me, because it, when a performer sees another performer perform, it's like, I recognize the power in your voice and all of that. And so we can easily get caught up in that part, because the person that performs is the same person that's, you know, driving me here in the van, but it's the more shinier version. We're our best selves when we're behind the mic and we get these minds to mold, you know, we're our best self. And so you get a facade kind of, but I got to meet you, and that was really like a pivotal moment for me. And that's when I felt that we would have like a lifelong friendship.
Yeah. And yeah, no, I felt the same way too. And I think, as I've learned about you, you've told me about, you know, these poetry lounges and other spaces where you meet these amazing artists. Mm-hmm. And some are performers, right? And I struggle with that word, because what I appreciate about you is that maybe there is a performance element to what you and I do. Mm-hmm. One of the things that always rings really strongly in my ears are my wife's words, who says, you know, I hate poets. I was like, why, babe? Like, it just seems like they're masturbating on stage. Mm-hmm. And they're really full of themselves.
Yeah.
And they have these flowery words, but then you meet them afterwards and they're full of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're sleeping around, they're disrespecting people, they're, you know, just really hurting humanity, but they're all about the liberation of the people on stage.
Uh-huh.
So I'm not a fan of performers. I'm not a fan of poets.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that. And it's been through my wife re-educating me to be like, see through the palabra.
Mm-hmm.
Palabra's beautiful,
mm-hmm.
but how you walk in your walk, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so then I think what I appreciate about you is when you were off of your keynote, because the keynote is real, it's an hour and a half, and then I meet you and I'm thinking, wow, like amidst all of those technical difficulties, she was shining, inspired us, and then I got to see your vulnerability. It made me appreciate you a lot more, and it made me see your realness. And so I just want to thank you for that. And every time we've had our chance to have a conversation, it seems like we don't know how to do anything else but go deep with it.
Yeah.
So let's go deep with it.
Yeah. Okay, so starting with that, like, I think where I want to go, because let's go to the deepest question I have, is what is your connection to your ancestors, and what advice would you give someone who wants to begin creating a deeper relationship with theirs?
So, you know, I know I'm Mexicano. I know I'm Mexican in the Southwest United States, and what some people call Aztlan, other people call the United States, some people call it Turtle Island or Anahuac. But when I was coming up, I was never taught my history. I had an amazing mother who worked really hard, but she didn't know her history the way your dad did.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't grow up with Chicano studies or this consciousness of Aztlan or who we are as a people. So to be honest with you, by high school age, I really struggled in school. My father was gone. My mother had been deported. We had gone through hell and back, and I didn't have a cultural identity that I could hold on to. Maybe as you're staring at me, maybe I have a big old cactus on my forehead, but I couldn't see it. I didn't even want to be Cesar.
Mm.
I wanted to be Caesar. And my homegirl next to me was Maria. She wanted to be Mary. And we were being subtractively schooled, and I didn't even know what that was.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that in most schools, they get rid of our roots, our pride, our language, our culture. And so much so that I don't even know how to pronounce Nahuatl words very well,
mm-hmm.
right? We talk about Spanish and English, but I didn't even know about the language of Quechua or Tzotzil. And later I began to study a little bit of Mexican history and a little bit of U.S. history and realize they did this by design.
Mm.
And this is the thing, is that if you and I are trees and they start to slowly chop off our roots, we're going to walk around pretty much limbless.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the beautiful thing about this podcast. Is under our feet, you and I are rerouting together.
Yeah.
And with all of your comrades and sisters and brothers who are rerouting, trees have this power to connect their roots underground together, and they get stronger.
Mm-hmm.
So even though we have a system that's trying to chop us off, it's about learning who we are and where we come from. And if we situate ourselves, we're in California, we're in the Southwest, we're in Aztlan, two grandmothers ago, this was Mexico.
Mm.
Not my grandma's grandma was here when it was Mexico. And here's the thing that tripped me out, is I was people's wetback for hella long. I was an illegal alien for hella long. I was an immigrant for hella long. And I didn't know that I'm none of those things. Because
mm-hmm.
my abuelita said, mijo, we didn't cross the border crossed us.
Mm-hmm.
And when I heard that and she said, pronounce California right. Texas, Arizona, Nevada, Oregon. And then I started looking up that history and I realized she's right. I'm no longer your illegal. You can no longer call me a Mexican immigrant.
Mm.
Shit, I'm in my ancestral land. This is our roots,
yeah.
and we have to reclaim it. And, you know, something happens to our physiology. I don't know if the first time you met your boyfriend, if your body spoke to you physiologically and you got goosebumps. Well, when I start learning my history and I find out where I come from, se me enchina la piel. All my little pelitos start standing up,
yeah.
and I have a physiological reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Also, my vertebrae gets a little stronger.
Mm.
Like you cannot actually put me down anymore. And we're living in a society where they're calling our people murderers and rapists. And that's the president of this country calling us that. But you know what? I walk with my head held high. I'm ready to take on the president or whomever. And that's what happens when you have a strongly rooted tree. So to answer your question, once we know our history and where we come from, it also makes sometimes when we're in despair or deep fear or deep depression, to remind ourselves what our dad might say or what our abuela would might say, get up, get up. You're a fan of Cardi B, and you've been knocked down 9 times.
Yep.
But this is moment number 10.
That's right.
So we get up 10.
That's right. You know it. You always have this ability to just like make people feel. Well, one, seen, heard, but also felt. Like, when you listened to my podcast the last time and you texted me, you just decided that you were going to write to it. And for whatever reason, that I don't know how long that took you. I don't know. But that meant so much to me because what you said was, I felt like you summarized what I said, but that meant because you heard me. You heard what I was trying to say, and you were able to, like, break it down to its lowest common denominators, you know? And that meant a lot to me. I always have to sneeze.
Maybe it's going to be classic to the show. Will you let me speak on that just for a second?
Yeah.
You have a poem that I've been studying that I think is called Bulls Versus Brains.
Mm-hmm.
And that poem is really challenging to a lot of people. And what I found really powerful in it is that I don't know you very well, but my sense is that people have judged you for your outside.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe tried to use you. Maybe men have tried to have their way with you or see you as an object or as someone who's aesthetically beautiful.
Yeah.
And I don't know who sees you. And so I think part of the challenges that we have in our society is that we only see with our eyes.
Mm.
And so in the podcast, I can't see you.
Mm-hmm.
I could only choose to hear you and to deeply listen. And what I heard you say when you were talking about your connection with, like, just how music has been healing in your life. And then, you know, you start talking about different artists, especially Cardi B. I think you were talking about Nipsey. I think you were talking about Kendrick Lamar. And then I think you were also talking about just messages you're hearing from your father. May he rest in peace. Messages from one of your friends that you take care of, the losing of his father, her father.
Yeah.
As I began to hear that, I'm like, there's a lot of depthness here. There's a lot of pain here. There's a lot of rawness here. Why not close my eyes and actually listen?
Yeah.
And I just think what happens is we get wired to notice aesthetics.
Mm-hmm.
And we have trillion-dollar industries that help glorify that. Like the cosmetic industry is there to make us focus on only our looks. And what your music and your poetry, because a lot of your poetry is very musical, challenges us to do is, can you actually see me?
Mm.
Or do you just think I'm attractive? And so you're very challenging. You're challenging to gender norms. You're challenging to machismo and patriarchy. You're challenging to identities. And it seems like sometimes you're living the world through the 9 knockdowns.
Mm.
But your father would have the 10th get up. And I just think that I'm looking to get to walk this earth with you as we continue to do the 10th get up of the 9th knockdown. And that's what I see. And we need you so much in this world. I get is not a lot of people have tried to listen in the past and now get out the way.
Yeah, that's basically where it feels like where I'm at.
Mm.
It's like I feel like I have been taken for granted, but also fatally underestimated because I did not love myself for a long time because I was just in so much pain. Because of losing my dad. And so I tried to numb it for a really long time with alcohol and drugs and sex and just like toxic behavior and things that I knew weren't good for me. I would do on purpose because I just didn't feel like I deserved anything else. And so even in the midst of those things, there were moments where I would have like a high, like the TED talk, because I can't even hide that part of me that needs to be on stage. I can't. And I need to share my words and I need to share my messages. But in the midst of that, right after that, I will probably went and did something toxic after and did something stupid that wasn't good for my soul. Mm. But in the process of that, I have learned that now that I'm awake to my life without these medications and just like really trying to love myself, I'm like starting to see where basically everybody had me fucked up. Like people have had me fucked up, like, and now that I can see who had me fucked up and in what ways they had me fucked up, now I don't have to prove nothing to nobody. I can just show them. I can just show the world what I have allowed to also have myself fucked up on. And that's powerful for me because that's what this podcast is. It's an act of practicing what I preach.
Hey.
You know, because I always tell these kids and everybody that to use their voice, but was I using mine? I mean, yeah, a little bit, but I was only using it in the confines of what was acceptable for, I guess, someone like me. Mm-hmm. I didn't think that what did I have to say that was so important that I needed to go buy a microphone off Amazon, you know? But either way, I'm just going to do it. Because yeah. when you let your light shine, you give people unconsciously the permission to do the same. Mm-hmm. And that's what we are doing here today at this summit. It's okay, next question. Let's see. What is the purpose of being a teacher? To blank. To what?
Maybe it's what we've been doing with this conversation is to listen.
Mm.
And see. Like, I see you.
Mm-hmm.
You came hella high, and I see how high you are spiritually. Like, I see how amazing you are. You got an interesting perfumer cologne on. Like, you smelling hella weed right now. The ex-student ex, right?
Yeah.
But I see you. Like, I see your brilliance. Mm-hmm. I see your amazingness. I see your roots. I see your potential. I see you. And then after I see you, would you give me permission to challenge you? Would you give me permission to share an offering? It's to, I think, facilitate conversations.
Mm-hmm.
And really good educators have saucy conversations all the damn time. Mm-hmm. And they're never at the center. So usually the spaces are circular.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's sharing palabra, and when they notice a kid is having a hard time sharing palabra, maybe they're more introverted, maybe they're going through it, maybe they don't trust the space, they give them tools like a journal, or maybe just talk to one other person. But I think it's having the ability and opportunity to just walk with young people in their walks of life. And the way we say it at Homies is we say, we see a warrior in you, we see a healer in you, we see a scholar in you, and we see a hustler in you.
Mm.
So then the role of an educator is to kind of help polish a little bit of that's already there. But what happens is if you're decent at what you do, they polish you.
Mm.
They check you on stuff. You were telling the students today that they have a radar for BS, mm-hmm. that they're able to detect that. Well, that's what young people can do. And so young people actually bring adults back, I think, to their sacred purpose. Adults just have to listen. The problem, though, with podcasts and lectures and even TED Talks is that we create these sages on the stage. We create these wisdom keepers that are supposed to have the mic and know it all. Good teachers don't do that. Good teachers pass the mic hella much.
Mm-hmm.
The mic ain't about them. The space ain't about them. They would look at a classroom and flip it so that it's circular. Those are amazing. I had one of those. It was my abuelita. She was strapped with some droopy-ass arms, like these droopy-ass arms. And if I came home hella loaded or I was going through stuff or I got into it, whatever, she also did hella hugging,
mm-hmm.
and smudging in her own way. So a good maestra hugs, smudges, listens, holds, walks. And I'm not trying to get religious on you, but I met Father Greg Boyle. And the
I
vato,
love Father Greg.
Yeah, you know, he's amazing, right? And he
shout out to Homeboy Industries.
That's right. And shout out to Father Greg and everybody there. But he doesn't speak about, he's a Jesuit, but he doesn't speak about Jesus a lot.
Mm-hmm.
He tries to walk it.
Mm, and he does.
So teachers, I think, should stop teaching and just walk it. Mm. Walk it with. Don't talk about education. Don't talk about how great you are of a teacher. Don't name yourself that. Just walk with young people and know that it's going to take forever, because they say that if you plant some bamboo, it grows underground for 7 years. So you might not be seeing what's happening, and you might not know what the soil looks like. Young people get to determine when they grow, how they grow, what they're listening to. And be careful with your words, teachers, because everything you say, we're listening to. If you ever look at me sideways, if you ever try to bring me down, if you ever cut me, if you ever make a joke about my situation, you use the word shaming a lot. When people try to shame us about different things, mm-hmm. if you shame me, shit, I'll never forget that. Yeah. And I might not ever trust you again. So be careful with your palabras. So we try not to use as many palabras, and we try to live our walk differently. Mm-hmm. That's what I think a teacher should be.
Good fucking answer. That's what I would have said. Except different. But I think that that's really, yeah, you know, you will walk into a school, and the teacher of the month
yeah.
is not the teacher that the kids like. It's the teacher of the month is chosen by the kids, not yeah. the faculty. Yeah. The faculty can't choose who the best teacher is because they're not being taught by these people.
Yeah.
The best people to ask, who's the best teacher in the school? The kids will tell you. And you know who it is because you walk by their room and their door's not closed. Their door is open. There's kids eating lunch, chips here and there. The teacher's over here finishing her work or his work. And they're in community with the students. It's not this ivory tower that I, yeah, it's not like I'm the keeper of all the knowledge. That's not a thing. It's either a community or it's nothing.
Mm.
And that's why I believe that homies empowerment is such an important concept. Mm. And that's the reason why I waited for the middle of this to ask you about it, because there's you, who you are is the reason why homies is going to succeed. And so I wanted to get a little bit of those questions in before I asked you about homies. But can you tell me what homies empowerment is? And I really want to know where you were when you came up with the idea for it.
Yeah. Well, there's so much to talk about there. And you inspired a lot right now. I wanted to talk to you about custodians for a minute, because they're my favorite teachers. Because custodians see me cutting in the bathroom, and they see me getting loaded in the back of the school.
Mm.
And so the custodians are usually the best counselors. Mm-hmm. So if you ever want to go to an adult that's really running the school, you go to the custodian and the secretary. Mm-hmm. But we'll save that for another time.
Okay.
Homies empowerment. My homegirl, Lisbeth Gomez, and I, we were at a continuation school where they were wanding people, where they were searching backpacks, where there was barbed wire. And this is how they welcomed you to school every day.
Where was this at?
In Oakland, California. And we're like, this is some bullshit. Like, this is not cool. This is not the way kids need to be welcomed. Mm-hmm. And then they were put on a computer to do something called Cyber High that wasn't really teaching them anything. It's just get your credits quick. It's this machine. Get mm-hmm. your credits and get out.
Mm-hmm.
We were so uninspired. And here's the thing, is that this was like my... I'm old. This is my 15th year as an educator. And every year I went to more funerals in East Oakland than I went to graduations.
Mm.
So I knew I was doing something wrong. We didn't like the schools that we were in. And I'm not here to speak negatively about no organization. But there were so many programs that work with young people in gangs who their only answer was gang prevention. That's what they call themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And they have this old narrative that the only thing good out of a gang is you're gonna die or you're gonna end up in jail.
Yeah, jails, institutions, or death.
That's it. And it's a scare tactic. And it does not work. And most of these people have never been in a gang. So I realized I wanna be a student of gangs. So I humbled myself and I said, my favorite students are cutting my class. And they're at the liquor store in the backyard. So before I take Raza History to the liquor store in the backyard, let me go listen to the liquor store in the backyard. And I saw some dynamic things happening in the backyard. Homies weren't just beating each other up. They were like counseling each other. They were there for each other. They were problem solving. They were dealing with social emotional issues. They were dealing with relationship issues. They were dealing with turf issues. And it was dynamic what I saw in backyards in East Oakland for a long time. So then I started to wonder, what if we built a school exactly like a gang, where kids feel protected, they belong to it, they want to tag it, they want to be a part of it, they want to rep it. We take the best of gangs and we put it at Homies Empowerment. That's what I started thinking about. And then it began to evolve like this. Check this out. So I asked a couple of homies from rival neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
I said, who's the homie you respect the most? They had a hard time, but you know what they told me?
What?
Their abuelita. In different ways, both said, if my abuelita's here, I wouldn't be smoking.
Yeah, I won't be acting up.
And then so I was like, what if we had an abuelita in every class? And then the kids told me, please, we cannot have cops in schools. In our schools, we have police departments
it's
in there.
It's fucking ridiculous. It is the most... Ooh, you don't get me started because having... Oh, my God. These... The moment a kid does something wrong, I have been in classrooms where the teacher does not even bypasses the security guard for the school and calls straight to the campus police officer.
Imagine.
And so the first person a kid sees, because the behavior problems are deep rooted.
Yeah.
And it's not a behavior problem, it's a problem of something else.
Yeah.
And it's rooted, but no one ever wants to get to the root. It's they always want the quick fix of get this person out of my class because they're distracting. Sometimes distractions are cries for help. Most of the time they are. And a lot of times the reason why somebody's distracting is also too because they might not understand what's going on. Mm. That person might have a learning disability, the same reason that I was kicked out of school, kicked out of class a lot and got in trouble a lot was because I did not, A, understand what was going on in the class, but I also did not want to get called on. I would get kicked out on purpose or make jokes the same way my dad would, because that was my defense mechanism. That was my survival tool.
That's right.
And so I also, my dad didn't know how to read until he went to prison. And nobody would have ever known that because my dad was the charming, like he was this class clown. Yeah. And he was always getting kicked out, but he was doing it on purpose because that was the only way that he didn't have to be embarrassed. Mm. Because the moment they asked him to read, he couldn't do it. He couldn't do it. And it was like very embarrassing for him. And I know that he struggled with that a lot. Mm. And so I can relate to him in a sense where when we see these cops and it just completely militarizes and criminalizes Imagine. Kids for being kids. And it's just, it's like a quick fix this whole scared straight tactic. There's no such thing as scaring anyone straight.
Imagine that.
Fear to teach it's backwards. Well, it's a colonial concept.
Yeah.
It's a colonial concept.
But even on the streets, some of the homies do it too. Mm-hmm. And so what we started to realize, I had a chance to hear Maya Angelou speak. And Maya Angelou as a grandmother figure. And, you know, the late rapper Tupac Shakur, he was never a gang member. He was a young man from a Black Panther family who went to a school of performing arts. Mm-hmm. He learned to be a ballerina. And that's all beautiful. And Tupac was becoming a persona of a gangster after a film called Juice. Mm-hmm. And he was about to go off on somebody on the set of Poetic Justice. And his grandmother stepped to him. And her name is Maya Angelou. Mm-hmm. And she checked him with love. And it reminded me of the droopy arms of my grandmother. And so then what we started thinking is, what if we had droopy arms counselors that are grandmothers like the Maya Angelous all over the hallways? Mm-hmm. With the chanclas and the abrazos mm-hmm. for the young people. Then we would ask some of our young designers of who most listens to you? They never said a psychologist, a therapist. No one ever has named that in my neighborhood. Mm-hmm. They said my tío. Well, where's your tío? He's at Pelican Bay. Mm-hmm. When is your tío getting out? Never. So the idea started to be born in Homies Empowerment. If the tío can't get out of the prison because he's doing a life sentence, can the wisdom be liberated? And now that we have all this technology like this podcast, like these, Skype and everything else, what if we were able to come into Pelican Bay, set up a classroom with the tío, and the tío comes in directly to East Oakland every week? And I hate to say it like this, but tío's not going anywhere, and we hope tío lives a long time. But tío has so much wisdom to share. Imagine if he's coming in every Monday at the beginning of the week and every Friday at the end of the week to check in with the little homies of the class.
Yeah.
And that became our advisory system.
It's genius. It's not even genius. It's like the simplest concept.
It is.
It's
grandmas and tíos.
It's the smartest thing because it's so it's decolonized education is what it is.
Well, and you know, check this out. When the boys would cry the most, and when the girls would cry the most, and these are good tears, because, you know, tears are the language of the body, and it's an expression, right? But when we don't release them, we implode, not explode, right? We implode on the inside.
That's right.
And we would take people to these really dark places called a sweat lodge. And so if you think of the earth just flat for a second, and then you put a teepee on top of it, it looks like the womb of Mother Earth. So a sweat lodge is the womb of Mother Earth.
Wow.
And so when the kids come into the womb of Mother Earth, it's really dark. There's some grandfather rocks in there that are really intense. And then there's no lights on. It's all dark. And then there's an elder that's singing a beautiful song and asking in this first round of prayers to just focus on yourself and your needs. Young people start to release. In the second round, they say, think about your familia, blood and chosen. In your third round, think about your neighborhood. And in the fourth round, think about your world. What we have found most healing and the most release is when kids were in the dark. But when can we be in the dark at school together?
Yeah.
So we would be in the dark, all of us crying, all of us releasing, all of us wishing for a better world, all of us healing. So we thought, let's build a sweat lodge in the school. And then remember you asked me earlier about the importance of our indigeneity and our roots? Mm-hmm. Well, mathematics is the inheritance that our ancestors gave us, but I can't even pass an algebra test anymore.
Same.
And I come from pyramids. I come from anthropology and archaeology, and now I think I'm not a scientist?
Yeah.
So the science is going to be Mexica science.
Nice.
And the mathematics is going to be Mayan math. Dope. So everything that we do is about rerooting in every level. Of course you're the next scientist. Of course you're going to cure cancer. Mm-hmm. Of course you're going to build new pyramids. And that's what we're trying to do at the school. But every single step of the way, there's been a barrier and an obstacle because they don't want a school like this to exist. There's nothing...
Who have you had the most pushback from?
Well, this is the thing, is they're like, what do you mean this is for gang members? That's one. So a lot of folks in the community are like, they don't deserve a second chance. That's a one. Another one is... You're lucky if they get a GED. So it's this idea of we have such low expectations because we have demonized young people for so long that we don't see them as doctors. When I spoke your name into existence today, it was only Doctora Aguirre. That's all I said. Whether you choose a doctorate or not, that's what beside the point. But can you? Heck yeah, you can.
Yeah.
But we don't often get told that.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to see young people as the builders of pyramids. So if I take a kid who hates math and hates timetables, I'll do what my wife does. I'll teach them how to do architecture and AutoCAD and design their own building. One design would get them 10 G's. But we're not talking about the money behind it. Like, you are a builder of pyramids.
Yeah.
Then you start learning the math behind it. And all this is us finding our sacred purpose. And I mentioned this earlier. It's cultivating the scholar it's already in there. The healer that's already in there. The hustler that's already in there. The warrior that's already in there. And those four are simply for emancipation. As people emancipate themselves, it's over.
That's real talk.
That's the school we're building.
That's real talk.
And I gotta tell your audience, like, we need you. So, like, we need you to donate bricks and books and lectures and mm-hmm. palabra and come be a tía and an abuela
yes.
and everything in between, because this is not Cesar school. This is not the homie school. This is not a school for Oakland. This is an ancestral dream.
Mm-hmm.
Let's build it together.
Dope. I'm so excited to see your dream. Well, you mentioned that you guys just reached $1 million.
In fundraising, imagine that.
Jeez.
Like, it's crazy.
That's amazing. It's crazy.
And you know, I couldn't raise $500. That's not true. We got good at the car washes. And we would get about $500. Sometimes we got hella lucky and it was like $1,500 with the car wash.
Uh-huh.
And we would do the spaghetti dinners. Hella good times, $700. We just reached $1 million. A combination of writing grants, of going after scholarships, mom and pop donations. It sounds like a lot though, but a normal size high school has a $3 million budget per year.
Yeah.
And we have to compete with that.
Mm-hmm.
So we're still $2 million away, but I'm not scared anymore.
Yeah, once you've reached just the number a million of anything, it's like, it just, doesn't it feel like now it, anything has always seemed like it was possible for you, but I mean, you just, every day you get closer to your dream. How does that feel?
Well, no. I wish it was like that, mujer. It's not. So have you heard that dicho that, like, at first it feels impossible,
mm-hmm.
and then it's like you start to walk and you realize the journey's really hard. It's not impossible anymore, but it's probably inevitable because this is hella hard. No, perdón. I'm mixing my words. First it's impossible, then it's improbable.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's going to happen, maybe not. Eventually it becomes inevitable and you stay in your walk. And you have seen it when you published your book. You have seen it when you went on your speaking tour. Now with your podcast, and you had your naysayers. Some lived outside of you, some lived inside of you, the naysayers.
Word.
But it went from impossible to like, look it, we're doing the podcast, we're doing the thing, and it's going international. Right? That's just the way it's going to be.
Yeah.
you had shared with me some big dreams of, like, you know, things you're going to do and all that kind of stuff. It's going to happen, but you got to stay faithful to the walk and stay faithful to your dreams. Mm-hmm. You said something earlier that really hit me, is that I'm still attacked by fear. I still have not overcome fear. That is why we need podcasts like this, because when I listen to you, when I listen to powerful voices that give me hope, I start to give my own fear and insecurities and doubt less power, and I start to live in the what if, right? And you talk about Marianne Williamson and you know, really permission to let our lights shine. The thing is, sometimes we've lived in hella darkness that we don't see the light. But then another homie tells us, the best time to shine your light is in darkness. And you only need a tiny little bit of light. So if you're hella suicidal, you're hella in pain, you're hella going through it, that's real. Hella darkness. Just shine a tiny little flicker of light in a dark ass room and watch what happens. You can see it. So if you're out there and you're going through hella darkness, just a little bit. Remember your dad. Remember your abuela. Remember your ancestors. Remember your history. My mom says, remember your 21-foot ladder. And what she means is everything from cancer to evictions to homelessness is a 20-foot border. We got a 21-foot ladder that's invisible inside of us.
Yeah.
Bust that out in the darkness and watch what happens.
That's like such a powerful image. Like, because I can see myself. Like, I can see myself on this ladder, and then there's just one extra foot that I have, and just that one foot that's given on the 21st, that's the thing that will get you over the hurdle. That's the thing that will get you over the obstacle.
So you gotta let me ask you a question.
Okay, go.
On your Chingona fire days, when you're really feeling it, what's your 21-foot ladder?
That's a good question.
But not when the self-doubt, not when the pain, today none of that's gonna win. Like, you know you're walking your destiny. I don't know if you, did you ever see Real Women Have Curves?
Mm-hmm. With America Ferrera?
Yeah, so you remember that final scene where her mom is always attacking her about her weight, and she has to stay in work and blah, 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 and all she wants to do is go to New York and follow her dreams.
Yeah.
But she's trying to teach her how to walk. And she gets to New York, and she starts to walk and strut her swag. Tell me about your strut and your swag when you know you got it, when it's that 21-foot ladder and you're like thebomb.com.
I think, like, when that happens for me, I used to be so, I hurt if someone doubted me, or if I would be hurt and I would also kind of let it defeat me. But now it just empowers me, like, to because now I know what's inside me. Like, now that I've been able to get in touch with my ancestors by doing these energy healing cleanses, I have been told divinely that I am special and that I am on the right path, and that I just have to keep getting louder, making my voice louder, and making sure that my message is heard. And so now that I have that, I walk around with this kind of, like, invisible crown. Like, you said the other day that I was anointed, and that's the same word that my healer used when she was telling me what my dad was saying to me and what my grandma has been saying to me, and it's just these synchronicities that I have been noticing and been paying attention to that has allowed me to walk into a room and not need anyone's approval, because I have approval from my ancestors and I have approval from the divine. And so no one's approval in this room that I walk into is valid. None of it is validation for me anymore, because I have my own validation that I am giving myself and that I am allowing myself to have. And so I think that I, even on those days where I do feel like la más chingona, like, I still have to humble myself and remember that I am just as fallible and just as human as everyone in this room, but I am divinely protected, and that's the difference. That maybe they know it yet, or they don't. And so that I just didn't know it for so long. And I was the person that was looking around and comparing my shirt to everybody's pants and making sure that because I was in this world, I was in this, like, lower plane. And now that I have kind of reached this place where it's like the beginning of a spiritual awakening, that's the beginning of a spiritual awakening, is first admitting to yourself and acknowledging the divine that's already been in you this whole time that you were ignoring or asleep to. And so I think that that would be my ladder, is just knowing that I am just divinely protected and highly favored. And walking up to fear every single day and telling it to go fuck itself. You know, like just walking into the room, that because it is scary to get you were nervous. I was nervous, but it's this, these nerves are of, I'd rather be nervous to get up and talk in front of a people that I'm gonna share a message with than sit there and like implode because I want to speak, but I just am too scared to do it. And there's two different types of fear in that way. You know, there's the fear of what will happen if I say something, and then there's the fear of what can happen, which is more dangerous if you don't. And so yeah, I think that's, I don't know if I answered the question.
Yeah, no, and one thing that I want to tell your audience is you shared a poem one time. We were at Pasadena City College, mm-hmm. and lightning hit, and then the earth moved a little bit, and I kid you not, those of you that are at Pasadena City College, please, I don't know how these things work, call in, text somebody, phone somebody, just we need a witness. But you came up and you shared this piece called Chingona Fire. And the weather was not supposed to be like this in Pasadena, of all places.
Yeah.
And there was something that was out of this world that was happening in that moment, in that space and time. As I'm listening to you, I can't fully be in your shoes. I can't be in your wisdom. But I experienced some things that are hard to explain. Remember?
That was a crazy ass moment, because it wasn't just, so when I started speaking, so it first started with you, right? When you start, when you opened the whole conference or whatever we were doing, it started raining like super hella hard, remember? Like the kind of rain that slaps the ground, like you just feel it's heavy rain. But it was like immediately when you started talking, then you made a joke about it, but it was divine too. And then your whole presentation just really hit me, and I was really emotional throughout. And then when it was my turn to get up and do my poem, lightning struck the ground and it shook the windows. And I was like, what is this?
People were tripping out.
That was even before I had started doing the energy healing cleanses. So I was still not like awake to this whole. But even I, at that point, with my skepticism of just like everything, was still like, oh no, something just happened. Like, this was just not a normal average. And because and then we were done with the whole event. We walked out, it was sunny skies.
Super sunny, out of nowhere. It's like, how does a storm hit Pasadena in just that period of time? Mm-hmm. Coincidence, maybe?
I think not.
But the energy in the room was electric.
Speaking of Chingona Fire, your wife is a Chingona.
Yes.
So I want you to describe what she does and why it matters to the community.
Well, I think it's, she's really humble. It starts there.
What's her name? Tell us everything.
Yeah, so Jasmine Preciado, not on social media, doesn't like that, and walks really quietly. Her strength is in her quietness. Mm-hmm. She's really good with the one-on-one. Undocumented most of her life in this country. Went to public schools in Oakland, first in her family to graduate, mm-hmm. high school, go off to college. And she goes off to be an architect and a mathematician at UC Berkeley.
Damn.
That's where we met. And we are about to celebrate 19 years together.
Wow.
This December. And I'm blessed to walk this earth with her, and we're raising three babies together. We're raising three babies together, deeply rooted. Mm-hmm. Olin, Amaru, and Getsali. She became a math teacher for like a decade and would work with the young people, especially young mujeres, who would say to her at the beginning of the semester, don't even bother. I don't mess with math. That's cool.
That would have been me.
What you don't know, and that's cool. What you don't know is you're probably going to go with me to New York to speak at a conference about math. And what we're going to do is we're going to learn about plotting, but the numbers we're going to plot are the prison population versus years. And as you start telling me someone in your family who's locked up, the slope and all this rise and run stuff is going to come alive differently.
Damn.
And we're going to plot on the map everything that's beautiful about your hood. So every point where we learn X, Y stuff, that's a dope-ass barrio spot. This is a community center. That's the kind of math she was doing. And then she was teaching people to design their own buildings. Remember, in darkness, Mm-hmm. It's okay to have a little bit of light. What we just experienced in this room is that where we're doing our podcast, the entire lights just went out.
Yeah.
And all you see is a flicker of light. Uh-huh. And so all we're saying to y'all, something's up and it's beautiful.
Yeah, but we're in complete darkness right now. The only light is from my laptop.
Yeah, but it's flickering, right?
Yeah, and but so, you didn't even flinch.
Well, no, you can't. And so these kids start designing architectural plans. And when you can design your dream home, your safe space where no one's going to hurt you, your dream center, something comes alive. She did that for a decade.
There's so much agency in design.
In
to take ownership of something like, I made that. Like that's like a different level of autonomy that you would give a kid. Like just plotting the prison population, that's genius, because that for me would have completely changed my attitude toward numbers and math. Like, I am scared of them.
Yeah.
I count on my fingers and I do it like this because I like hide it, because I had a teacher who used to make fun of me for doing that.
Damn.
For counting on my fingers, because I'm not good with numbers, and so I would always have to recheck my... So what I do... Yeah, yeah. So what I do, for example, like when I have to leave a tip... You know how you have to add the tip number to the thing? I have created a dot system.
Yeah.
So I make dots, and I know exactly like what... I know what 5 dots looks like because I always put them in the same thing. So I can count them quickly, because I was shamed into having to figure out a silent way or a way that nobody could see that I was counting, because when I counted on my fingers, I got made fun of. So I think that having it taught by her... in that way would have completely changed, and must, and probably is completely changing the what numbers mean to young women.
Yes, but I want to just honor what you just said, because you just created a whole system for yourself. You were dehumanized and humiliated in school. It made you feel a certain way about mathematics. A lot of our people listening may not feel like mathematicians or scientists. Mm-hmm. It's happened to us on purpose in school. Because if you could beat the ancestral legacy out of you, you're not going to design anymore. You're not going to be a mathematician. And then you created a dot system. Like, you're a freaking genius, and you need to own that. And that's what my wife tries to do, is see the genius in you, and we go from there.
Yeah.
After a decade from that, President Trump gets elected, and my wife says, we got 3 babies at the house. We don't have any money. I'm going to law school.
Hey.
I'm going to become an asylum lawyer, and I'm going to help case by case and get my people freedom, and then I'm going to sue the president. And I'm like,
the who definition the heck are you? Of chingona.
Like, who are you, and can I be like you when I grow up?
Yeah.
So when you see her privately, same way. Mm-hmm. Hella humble, hella inspiring. Still gives me goosebumps, as it did 19 years ago.
Yeah.
And so I'm just blessed to walk this earth with her. And what we're trying to do is, I think we're trying to break some cycles of violence that have been intergenerational, where our families have been broken from us. Mm. Because of different issues, from slavery to everything else, our families have been broken, or they've tried to break them. So what we're trying and we're fighting tooth and nail to do is to reclaim familia. And familia looks however you want it to look. Mm-hmm. You know, if I ended up with a brother and this brother was my husband, beautiful. Mm-hmm. You know, if 2 mujeres ended up together, beautiful. We're not reclaiming the nuclear family mm-hmm. from the 1950s.
The heteronormative
family. No, nada de eso.
Colonized bullshit.
No, we're reclaiming love. And so if si me das permiso and I can show you my painted nails from my kids.
Ay, right, que lindo.
You can't see them. We're not trying to reproduce what's toxic. And so for me, that means I'm home cooking. For me, that means I'm taking care of the babies. And it's what I'm supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And so this mujer makes me a better man and a better human. Y ahí vamos.
Aww. I would be honored if she would let me interview her. I just would love to hear more about her everything that she's doing. That sounds incredible.
I'll ask her, you know, and I think as she listens to this, I'm hoping that she understands that her voice is super powerful, and that story is really powerful, because it's important to know how you came to be that mathematician, right? Mm-hmm. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I hope you're listening, and I hope you'll be on this amazing podcast soon.
The last question I want to ask is, you once shared a poem that your daughter Quetzali wrote. Can you describe your relationship with her and what that poem meant to you?
Well, here's the thing is that we were at a homie's dinner, mm-hmm. at a homie's empowerment, and you had spoken and you weren't feeling well. So physically you were very sick. Yeah, like you could barely speak. You're like on multiple T's and doing all this stuff. And then you had asked, and part of what we were asking together is for us to write intergenerational wisdom love letters to ourselves. Mm-hmm. And Kitsali wrote this love letter to herself, and she was 7 going on 8 at the time. Mm-hmm. So imagine an 8-year-old writing an intergenerational wisdom love letter.
Only at saying, homies empowerment.
No, saying you're beautiful, you're a warrior, you're strong, you're independent. Mm-hmm. And so here's the thing. Si me das permiso to tell you this. Did you ever hear about that movie Maleficent?
I love that movie.
So that movie's heavy, right?
Yeah.
And the thing is, we have seen fierce, badass women get described in the most negative ways. Mm-hmm. And whenever someone is going through their pain or reaches the so-called dark side in Hollywood and in films, they become witches and brujas. Mm-hmm. And that they don't say that out of love. Mm-hmm. So in this Maleficent film, we get to see someone literally ripping her wings off. Mm. And her journey is to regrow them. She doesn't need a partner to do that. She doesn't need anything else. My daughter was born with wings, and she still believes she can fly. Mm. My daughter believes she can do anything. So she jumps off of trees. She's broken her legs like 3 different times. She does not care. She's a warrior and a healer and a scholar and a hustler, and she knows it. Mm-hmm. And I, as an old man who's almost 50 as her dad, am scared shitless because I hear this really brave Me Too movement saying enough. We are sick and tired of being raped and violated and sexually assaulted. And every sister I meet ends up telling me a story of like Me Too. Mm-hmm. So then I think about my 8-year-old daughter. Who's going to try to hurt her? Who's going to try to go maleficent and try to clip her wings? Mm-hmm. So my role is to arm her with the truth, hella machetes and spirit and resistance. And no knock on people that play with dolls, okay? But she was playing with zapatistas when she was a baby,
hey.
Right? And so she knows who she is. She knows who she comes from. You ask her, and she's like, I'm a badass Chicana. And she's 8, right? And that's beautiful. However, you're smiling, and I love it. Mofos are going to show up and step to her and try to break her and try to break her spirit and try to clip her wings. Like maybe they've tried to clip yours. But well, we started with Cardi B, so we got to end there. I think at some point,
yeah.
You get knocked down 9 times. Mm-hmm. You get up 10. So what I'm sort of speaking into our daughter is you matter. You're beautiful. You're amazing. You're a warrior. You're Mexica. You're conscious. Don't let anybody take your wings away. And if they try, you cut that mofo and you keep flying. And that's that 8-year-old Quetzali.
I love her. I actually brought her some presents that I'm going to give you when we get to the car.
Oh, that's what's up.
Some art supplies, because I know when I was her age, I was just like obsessed with making things in bright colors. And so I got her some glitter and some Crayola oil pastels and stuff.
No. Something happened when I was talking about Quetzali in your eyes. Mm-hmm. We've talked about a lot of things. Mm-hmm. What happened? Because in this whole journey, we've had a beautiful conversation. We've gone all over. And then we talk about 8-year-old. What's up with 8-year-old Angela? Mm. And like, you just spoke into existence this beautiful poem this morning here at Sierra College about a love letter to yourself.
Yeah.
I wish you could read it. I wish you could share it even on this podcast. I don't know if you're able to.
Yeah.
But it's just you were listening to me about Quetzali with your eyes. What was going on?
I heard my dad talking about me. That's it. I knew that if he were here, that's what he would want to have said about me. So I just like had that moment for a second. Oh, I'm gonna cry. Why'd you do that?
I'm sorry.
It's okay. But like I just heard, just the way you describe her, it's like so, it's so pure. The love is just so like raw and beautiful. And I know that you will preserve that chingona in her, like you will do anything to preserve that. And I just like I imagine coming from a mom like that and a dad like you, God, there's no limit for that girl. There's no limit. She can do anything she wants. And I think that is going to be the most beautiful thing, to just watch whatever she chooses to do with her life, like in the sidelines cheering her on. I think that's going to be the most like beautiful thing to watch. Mm.
Thank you for that. And you know, the same for our two boys, because if they're listening, we think just as highly of you, Olin and Amaru. The thing is that Olin and Amaru, you have to hear this. It's mostly girls that get their wings clipped. Mm. And no knock on you boys. And a lot of boys are doing the clipping. So we love you. We think the highest of you. But part of why we're really focusing and centering Quetzali is because we didn't give her her chingona fire. I think when I've seen fire women and firemen be amazing, and I mean indigenous firemen and firewomen, they keep a fire at a sweat lodge so that the grandfather rocks stay hot. They don't control the fire. They just keep it going. So they're caretakers of the fire. So I think we were given the beauty to have this daughter who was born with chingona fire.
Yeah.
And our role as parents is to just nurture the fire. Es todo. But we don't get to give it to her. Nada. It's not ours.
Yeah. Sit back, watch, and enjoy.
See.
Thank you so much for letting me interview you, Cesar. I really
Thank
love you.
You.
I want to share something. My mom, when my mom found out that you were from South Central, she just like, she loves, those are her people. And so my mom spent a lot of time down there because that's where she was using heroin. Mm. And she was making a lot of bad decisions. That's where she was before she went to prison. And so there is a piece of her life that she spent there. But she always tells me that what she learned there is she learned the definition of true loyalty. Mm. And she learned the definition of what it means to have what you mentioned earlier, resilience. Mm. And to continue to mention Cardi, we get up 10.
Yeah.
We get knocked down 9 times and we get up 10. And that is, for her, that's what South Central represents, is that spirit, that unbreakable spirit. And so she sent a voice memo.
What?
She wants
oh,
to.
Oh, mom.
So.
Should we play some background music?
Background music? Okay, mommy, if you could say something to Dr. Cruz, what would you say? Ma, come on.
What I would say, I would just say thank you for believing in my daughter and opening up new doors for her and taking her under your wing. That's priceless to me. And I have to just say how proud I am of you for coming out of South Central Los Angeles taking your ass to Harvard and getting a degree. Drop the mic.
I think he's gonna like that, mom.
Good job. So that's my mom.
Your mom is heaven. Your mom is fire, man. And it's I'm hella proud to be from Compton. I'm hella proud to be from Jalisco. I'm hella proud to be from East Oakland. And the thing is, like, folks is grimy in the best of ways. Folks hustle in the best of ways. And sometimes we don't celebrate that enough. Mm-hmm. You know, it's only in hip-hop culture that it gets celebrated. But in society, people that are, like, about that life, they never get the respect that they're due. And so when I think about your mom, I think about the best of South Central. I think about not just some of the things she did, but, like, you were sharing with me a story that if she knew something was happening to you, it's on.
Yeah.
That's dope.
That's that loyalty.
Yeah.
And that just, I want to end with, I just feel inspired to share this because the first poem I ever memorized is by Tupac. Mm. And it's The Rose That Grew From Concrete. Mm. And I know many of us know this poem very well, but I want to say it to end today because I think that you and my mom, and I think all of us, I think a lot of us represent roses that grow from concrete, and this is by Tupac. Did you hear about the rose that grew from a crack in the concrete? Proving nature's laws wrong, it learned to walk without having feet. Funny it seems, but by keeping its dreams, it learned to breathe fresh air. Long live the rose that grew from concrete when no one else ever cared. Yay!
Oh, thank you so much. Please tune into this amazing podcast. Follow Millennial Mija. And I hope that you enjoyed this as much as I did. Thank you, Mom. Thank you, Angela. This has been really inspiring for me.
Okay, we have to end the cry. Thank you, Jesus. Thank you so much, Dr. Cruz. It just means the world to me that you took the time to just talk to me and make me cry. And also just the same way, like my mom said, just kind of taking me under your wing and really believing in me and, you know, giving me this opportunity to come and speak with you today.
but also just, you know, really lifting me up in ways that that just feel really genuine and just feel really familia. I don't know how else to describe you. It was just like automatic familia as soon as we met. And so, yeah, I want to end and close out by reading the Dear Angela poem that Dr. Cruz referenced earlier in the podcast, because every time I do this poem, I always say that, you know, this was a letter that I wrote to myself at a really difficult time. I was feeling like I didn't want to be here anymore, but I was also just too much of a coward to try and kill myself. So that's always a hell of a place to be in, right? And so, you know, I was taking these sleeping pills a lot more than I should have been. And it was because I just did not want to have to face the pain of my life. And so, you know, you just don't want to feel. And I wrote this letter to myself in a moment of kind of like clarity, I guess you could say, because that's what poetry is for me. It's a moment, it's an opportunity for me to be real with myself. So this is called Dear Angela. Dear Angela, you are divine. A gift from God, a light in the darkness, you are a miracle. The perfect verse over a dope beat, you are the greatest love story ever told. The greatest woman to ever live in your skin, you are phenomenal. The way you love others should be the blueprint you use to love yourself. You deserve to be loved wholly, worshipped like the goddess that you are. You deserve to be loved. I say this again because you seem to forget it so often. You are worthy of the same quality of love you give everyone else. Angela, your heart is an ocean. It is deep and full of life. It is so immense that parts of it have not yet been explored, and that is okay. Stop trying to give it away so easily and without collateral. You deserve an ocean in return. Stop settling for puddles. Stop trying to love them into lakes. Angela, you are enough. Without your poems, without your book, without your TED Talk, without your impressive list of accomplishments, without Chingona Fire, without your talented friends, without a boyfriend, you alone are enough. No matter how broken your Spanglish is, no matter how many colleges book you or not, no matter how many students you reach, no matter how poppin' your highlight is or if the wings of your eyeliner are even or not, you alone are enough. Why is this so hard for you to believe? Is it because your father left? Is it because your mother was never taught how to be one? You are not a mistake. Although you have made many, each one has brought you closer to today. That's something else you need to know, mija. The most important day in your life always has been and always will be today. Too often you let your depression rob you of it. Dear Angela, stop letting your depression rob you. Stop letting the questions consume you. Time is better spent looking for the answers. Look within. I know you so often feel stuck in the space between mediocrity and greatness. Let me make myself clear. There is nothing mediocre about you. Stop letting fear hold you back. Fear is quicksand. It will swallow you whole no matter how hard you swim, trying to keep your head above the surface. Eventually, your arms get tired and the self-doubt chokes the air from your lungs. Fear is the enemy of greatness. Do not let it trick you into forgetting who you were born to be. Dear Angela, you are still a poet. Even when you haven't written in months. Your worth as an artist is not determined by your productivity. You are eternal. You will live forever, and so will your words. Decades from now, little brown girls with broken Spanglish will do book reports on you. They will open your book, and it will transform into a mirror. They will see themselves, smile, and recite this poem aloud. They will replace your name with their own, and the doubt and pain will fade away. Dear Angela, you are important. Your work is important. Your life is important. One day you will know that. And it may not be today. But if you just stick around long enough, you will see that I am right. And thank me for writing this. You will know that it saved you. Love, Angela.
If you would like to support this podcast, you can rate it, review it, or subscribe. And to keep up with me daily, follow me on Instagram at Millennial Mija. If you feel moved to pay it forward, you can always hit my Venmo at Millennial Mija. And for bookings, visit me at, yes, you guessed it, millennialmija.com. It's called branding, honey. You need consistency.